The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and it's awesome to my Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Gladwell. Now let's jump into AAA. The only store we have today is Hidden Valley Ranch, in collaboration with Brooklyn-based ice cream parlor Van Leeuwen, has released limited-time ranch-flavored ice cream. The product is being sold at select Walmart stores nationwide from March 20th to March 28th. What are y'all's thoughts on this?
Can't be more disgusting. I mean, it's an interesting thought, I guess, but ranch and ice cream, two great things, but two completely different things that don't belong anywhere near each other.
When we first started talking about the story and y'all were trying to convince me to try this awful ice cream, I don't think there's any amount of money in the world that, you know, would get me to try this. I think it's very similar to the mac and cheese ice cream they released, and that's disgusting too. Any thought of trying to break down a regular food item like that, that is not like a dessert-based item, it's just not going to work. It's going to be disgusting, and yet they keep doing it. I don't know anyone in this world that likes this ice cream.
Yeah, it's awful. I don't know. Whoever came up with this needs to be banned from the food industry. This is just an awful combination. One of the people at Hidden Valley recommended you try it with crushed pretzels or potato chips. I'm not sure why you want to put that on an ice cream, but sure. So we all try it?
No, never.
No.
Moving on.
All right, Gray. March Madness.
Yeah, the best 4 days in all of college basketball, really, in sports in general, was this past Thursday through Sunday in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. So we're here to talk about, let's first talk about the round of 64. Starting in the South region, Alabama able to take care of business against Texas A&M Corpus Christi, 96-75. Even though Brandon Miller did not score in the basketball game, Alabama looked dominant, scored 96 points, shot 45% from three, and only had eight turnovers, largely due to the massive play off the bench from a guy like Nick Pringle, who had 19 points and 15 rebounds. Nathan, what did you see from Alabama to get started going to this game, keeping what they had in momentum from the SEC tournament?
Yeah, opening up the first few minutes, here's what it looked like. He had a guy in Noah Clowney who really hasn't been, you know, that dominant of a scorer overall this season. He comes out and gets an immediate good start. He had like 10, 12 points like that in restricted minutes. He only played like 10 minutes, so that was a huge thing. And then, of course, the obvious thing with Brandon Miller not scoring, he was dealing with a groin issue, and you'll see that coming up that – you know, he's kind of having to work around that. He's not played as many minutes, but of course, in this game, we didn't need him. Realizing that the bench is there and, you know, it can reduce minutes for your starters, especially in a game like this. It's a first-round game. It's not a great opponent. You kind of get that rest for starters that, you know, is necessary when you're going into this big stretch of games. And you know, they got it done. The bench, especially behind Nick Pringle, was crazy. 96 points, and, you know, the best player in college basketball doesn't score. I'd say that's pretty good.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Nathan, I think the bench was the difference maker in this game. When you have a guy being your best player, Brandon Miller, scored 0 points and had the ability to score 96 points, really shows the depth of your team there. And then Bama also shot 45.5% from three. That's good to see with their struggles later in the season from three, being able to start shooting better. And then they only limited themselves to eight turnovers. I know it's against Texas A&M Corpus Christi, but to limit the turnovers in the first round where we have all those jitters, it's a good thing to see from Alabama.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the second game in that little region in Birmingham was the 8-9 matchup, Maryland versus West Virginia. This was a closely bought battle the entire way outside of the first little bit. I thought West Virginia was kind of going to run away with it. They got up like 16-4 or something like that. And then Maryland was able to claw back, do some really good play down the stretch, just able to work their way back in this game. And Maryland ended up winning 67-65. Maryland only made six threes in this game and ended up beating a team like West Virginia, who's, we've seen in this regular season, been really good shooting really good shooting team. Eric Stevenson was held to 9 points, 4 of 17 from the field. What did y'all see from this one?
Yeah, to start out, I think that West Virginia kind of got up early, and you know, they kind of got in their mind thinking that a team like Maryland wouldn't have exactly the firepower to come back in this game, speaking that their shooting hasn't been great all season away from home. But Maryland was overall the more physical team in this matchup. They were able to get to the rim more, got to the free throw line, and people stepped up when they needed to. West Virginia had several stretches where they couldn't score the ball, and that played a big part in it. But I think a team like West Virginia, it was a coin flip game. And really, you could have seen the final 2 minutes go either way. Both teams had shots to, you know, put their teams ahead and win the game. And being the first team that you really wonder, you know, it's early in the morning. If this was a later game, had this West Virginia team played different. But we really got a good game out of this. And, you know, Maryland moves on.
Yeah, the two guys I identified in this game were Maryland guard Jameer Young and then West Virginia guard Eric Stevenson. Both those guys played pretty terrible games, with Young shooting 1 for 5 and Stevenson shooting 4 for 17. And the difference in this game was for a Maryland, their forward Julian Reese, brother of Angel Reese, LSU's guy, LSU's star women's basketball player. So I think that was probably the difference there for Maryland to get this win over West Virginia.
So now Maryland matched up with Alabama in the round of 32. And then in this game, Alabama comes out hot. Again, just like Nathan said in that first game, Noah Clowney comes out playing absolutely outstanding. Brandon Miller gets his action back. Alabama advances to the Sweet 16. What did y'all see from Alabama in that round of 32 matchup?
To start with, I think that, you know, the game started slow again. We start slow at times. And I think it's more so just getting a feel of your opponent. But Maryland plays really good defense, and Alabama plays really good defense. Neither team could score. It felt like you were just running up and down the floor, watching the ball hit the side of the rim. You get into halftime, you're only up 5 or so, and then Alabama comes out. They start getting points in transition, which contributes to actually getting the offense flowing. Maryland couldn't break Alabama's defense down enough, and Alabama dominates in the second half, scoring 45 points, and you know, they move on. I think this Alabama team, just the depth they have, the understanding of the game, and the length and talent that they have, really puts themselves over teams like Maryland. And you know, you'll see coming up when they had to play San Diego State in the Sweet 16, really, you know, a test of Alabama's talent and length.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see that Javon Clowney led the team with 22 points. But you had guys in Noah Clowney and Mark Sears both shoot 1 for 5. With Brandon Miller struggling, I know he had 19 points, but he did shoot 5 for 17. You need those guys to step up, and obviously they didn't. So the bench of Alabama is going to have to play a lot better and lift this team if they're going to make it past San Diego State, who's a very good defensive team.
Yeah, definitely. So moving on to talk a little about Auburn and what Auburn was able to do here in this tournament. They get the 8-9 matchup as the 9 seed in Birmingham against Iowa, and they come out and win 83-75. One of the better offensive performances we've seen from this Auburn Tiger team outside of maybe the first 5 minutes in this game, down the stretch, scoring 83 points against this very good and long and much bigger Iowa team than them. Janai Broom was able to just take care of business. He had 19 points, 12 rebounds, 6 blocks. And then guys coming off the bench, how about the backcourt coming off the bench? You get 22 points out of the backcourt bench with Trey Donaldson with 11 points. He went 3 of 3 from 3 and ended up making 2 against Houston, where he went 5 for 5 from the field. We'll talk about that in a second. But Katie Johnson able to get 11 points as well. Really just boosted Auburn past this very, very good offensive Iowa team. Alex, what did you see from Auburn in this game to get them to the round of 32?
Yeah, I just saw guys other than Wendell Green lift this team. Wendell Green did not play great with 3 for 10 shooting. But you saw guys like Alan Flanagan and the two guys off the bench, Trey Donaldson, Katie Johnson, like you mentioned, Gray, be able to help that. But then I look at a team in Iowa who is supposed to be a really good 3-point shooting team. But like I mentioned last week, they don't shoot good away from home. And their two guys, Sanford and Murray, shot a combined 6 for 21 from 3. So that was kind of difference there to help Auburn get this one in advance to play Houston.
Yeah, I think that one of the things was Auburn really seemed to have control of this game the majority of the time. There were very few stretches where you felt like Auburn's lead could be in jeopardy or the game could be in jeopardy for them. And part of that was just, you know, playing at Birmingham, playing at a pretty much a home location for them. You know, Auburn fans only having to travel realistically 2 hours to watch the game. That I think that made a big difference, especially when you have Wendell Green not shooting well, you have your usual guys not playing their absolute best. You get your bench production that you've been missing all year with Trey Donaldson, Katie Johnson, and those two really stepped up. Being able to run Iowa off the three-point line, forcing them to take bad shots, really won Auburn this game.
Yeah, definitely. And then they get into the round of 32 and play the one-seeded Houston Cougars. And it was a tale of two different halves. It's exactly what we've seen all season long from this Auburn team, where that was probably the best first half I've seen this Auburn team play all season long. They put it together offensively, defensively. They were making shots from the outside. They were forcing Houston into bad shots and turnovers. It's exactly what you wanted. And then the complete opposite happened in the second half. It just fell to shambles pretty much. When it started like 2 of 20 from the field. I mean, it was like 12 of 23 in the second half from the free throw line. It just all fell apart, even fell off defensively with Marcus Sasser and Jamal Shedd really taking advantage of once they were out of foul trouble and kind of down the stretch. But this right here, I mean, it was all Tramon Mark. He was absolutely outstanding for Houston. 9 of 17 from the field, had 26 points and 9 rebounds. He showed that Houston can win without Sasser and Shedd going off. And I know Sasser had 22 points and Shedd had 10 points and 5 assists. But with them being in foul trouble, the run from Houston came from Tramon Mark. And that's going to be huge for Houston down the stretch. But for Auburn, this has got to be a wake-up call. To reload and get ready for this offseason, you know, pushing forward to next year. But this was just a completely tale of two different halves in this game.
Gosh, it seems like Auburn throughout the season figured that they only had to play 20 minutes of every game because they had always show up for the first half of the game. And then it felt like they took a nap the second half. And that was exactly what happened in this game, where Auburn had a 10-point lead at half, and they just kind of weighed down and let Houston take over, which, you know, going up against a really good Houston team with a great coach in Collins Hanson, he knows how to control the game, and they really just flipped the script here. But, you know, it goes back to Auburn not being able to shoot the ball. They struggled with that this season, and they just went ice cold when they really needed to score. However, the refs really kept them in this game. They had 36 free throw opportunities and only converted on 19 of them, 52%. It's not going to win you a basketball game, and that was the difference. You talk about someone in Janiah Broome who, you know, got to the line 16 times. He only made 6 of his 16 free throws, and that's a huge difference maker when you look at the score. And obviously you did what you were supposed to do. You got their key players in foul trouble, and you just really couldn't play defense against Houston's bench, and that was the main difference.
Yeah, in the first half, it felt like Auburn was getting everything at the rim, and then you flip to the second half, and Auburn just can't get anything. You had Jairus Walker with 6 blocks and Jawan Roberts with 5 blocks, the two Houston big men, and it just felt like Auburn had no chance in the paint, and there was no adjustment to try to shoot perimeter shots. It just felt like they were trying to force it in there. It wasn't working. Again, you had Wendell Green kind of struggle in this game, 4 for 9, only had 9 points. And one thing I look at, he did not attempt a single free throw. That's kind of mind-boggling to me, having Wendell Green probably be Auburn's best offensive player. And then, like I've mentioned time and time again, the free throw shooting from Auburn was probably the biggest discrepancy in this game and the reason they lost. You had them shooting 52%. Then you had Houston hitting 82% of their free throws. So you had the chance. Rush gave you a chance, like Nathan said. You just can't close it out and make your free throws. They're called free throws for a reason.
That's right. Absolutely right. So moving on, let's go through each region and talk about some games that we enjoyed that shocked us a little bit. There were some good upsets. Let's start with the South region. Obviously, Alabama advancing to the Sweet 16, San Diego State advancing to the Sweet 16, Creighton, and then Princeton advancing to the Sweet 16 for beating Arizona and Missouri. Alex, I'll start with you. What game in the round of 64 or the round of 32 from the South region really, really stuck out to you?
It was Furman, the 13 seed, beating number 4 Virginia by 1 point. Trying to figure out what Kihei Clark was doing. I know I'm lost for words. He just threw the ball. There was ample time left, and instead of calling a timeout or anything besides throwing the ball just straight up in the air and praying somebody catches it on your team, I don't know what he was doing. J.P. Pegues hit the game winner from three. He was only a 34% free 3-point shooter in the year, but that was pretty wild what Kihei Clark did. I know it's not going to define him with his career. He was great for Virginia, won a national championship with him. But, I mean, that's one terrible way to go out if you're him.
Yeah, to be different, because that game was probably the greatest game of the day for me watching that. But I'll take number 15, Princeton, upsetting number 2, Arizona. And you'll see Princeton has really been an underrated team in this tournament. You know, Arizona, I guess they just came out and expected to win this game, and they just let Princeton hang around. And then in the final 2 minutes, you realize that you're down against this number 15 seed, and the lights are too bright for this Arizona team. It's really a huge question. It was the biggest question. Could anyone of Arizona's guards perform? Because we know their center and power forward would show up, but really the guard play from Arizona was atrocious. And then in the final 2 minutes for Arizona, it felt like no one could make a basket, even when you had looks 1 foot away from the rim.
Yeah, definitely. For me, I got to continue what Nathan's saying about this Princeton team. They just shown to be better. They just shown to be fearless. And to come in as a 15 seed, as an Ivy League school like that, and they're one of the older teams in the league, not the oldest team in this bracket, but one of the older teams. But them to beat Arizona the way that they did, and them to get back on the offensive end, because they only scored 59 points against this good Arizona defense, they're able to shoot 45% and 35% from the three against Missouri and score 78 points and beat the seven-seeded Tigers by 15 to advance to the Sweet 16. I think that's a true upset and Cinderella of this bracket. Maybe there may be one other that we'll talk about here in a second, but shout out to the Princeton Tigers. So moving on down to the East region, Alex, I'll start with you again. What was a game in the round of 64, the round of 32, that really stuck out to you? I have a feeling where you're going with this one.
I'm going to have to go to the 9-seed FAU Owls beating the 8-seed Memphis Tigers, 66-65. Nathan was a big Memphis fan in this game.
Oh, come on now. Oh, come on.
Memphis had the opportunity. Kendrick Davis and Jonte Williams both shot 5 for 15. And like I said last week, if these guys aren't playing well, Memphis isn't going to win. And they didn't end up winning. FAU had the chance at the end. Nick Boyd got past the ball in the corner on an out-of-bounds play. Had the guy up in the air with the pump fake. Dribbled right by him. There was no rim protection by Memphis, and easily he got the layup for the win. Penny Hardaway threw his water bottle at the end. I understand the frustration, but I'm not sure why the guy's jumping at the guy on the three-point line, knowing it's a much easier shot for him to just drive right by him.
So, Nathan, but, now I leave you with this. Alex didn't take the bait that I was trying to go out, even though that's a great game. But Nathan, I leave you with this. What game really stuck out to you from this East region?
Yeah, I mean, he was just trying to be different, highlighting, how he was right and I was wrong.
I like that.
But let's go ahead and move on from that and talk about the biggest upset in NCAA tournament history. Number 16, FGU, upsetting number 1, Purdue. Zach Edey, tall man, but doesn't know how to play basketball. Purdue guard play. I don't know. Maybe they didn't get off the bus. Maybe they just didn't make the trip, because it looks like they just picked up a bunch of bumps on the street and put them in the basketball uniform. Braden Smith looks like he was just, wrapping the ball up in a little present and just giving it to FDU the whole game. And really, when you have only one person who is your main scorer and you have no other options outside of that, you're going to lose. And they were exposed this game. We talked about Purdue the whole year. I always said they were frauds. because you're never going to win with just one person. And FTU, they double-teamed Zaki the whole time. And Purdue, they did not have an answer. I could, you know, break down every moment of this game where FTU just completely stole the momentum. Every single time it felt like Purdue was going to come back in this game, really take over. FTU was right there. They make a big shot, make a big three, and it just – what a game.
Yeah. Nathan, we need an avid Purdue hater button for Nathan, because this entire season, it's just a random hate for Purdue has just risen up from him. But for me, it was the round of 32 game between Duke and Tennessee. Obviously, I really liked the matchup here. I was expecting Duke to come out with a little bit more firepower offensively, especially after what they did to Oral Roberts in the round of 64. But Tennessee's defense, even without their starting point guard Zakai Ziegler, was just unbelievable. Held Duke to their smallest scoring amount in NCAA tournament history, 52 points, 65-52. Tennessee advances to play Florida Atlantic in the Sweet 16. I don't know how good this Tennessee team is in the long run, especially without Zakai Ziegler and some struggles that we've seen from them offensively. But, man, their defense really came through in those first two games, holding Louisiana to 55 points and holding Duke to 52 points. I mean, that's as good as you can get. And we'll see how they can continue that with their matchup against FAU and try and get to the Elite Eight. So we'll go on to the Midwest region here. So, Nathan, this time I'll start with you. What game in the first two rounds that you really saw that you liked or that stuck out to you?
I'll go ahead and start with number 7, Texas A&M, taking on number 10, Penn State. It really felt like Texas A&M was the underseeded team here. Everyone could kind of been high on Texas A&M. I was high on Texas A&M. I liked the way their guards played. I thought they were overall a really good team. But Penn State ignored everything everyone was saying. And Adam Funk just decided to be the Nets coming as Steph Curry. Texas A&M had no answer on the defensive end, and you flip it around, and Texas A&M had no answer on the offensive end, in part to them not being able to get their regular 42 free throws a game because they only shot 12. Wade Taylor, the fourth, was a no-show. He shot 2 of 15. In a tournament game like this against a really, really good Penn State team, you can't do that. Congrats to Penn State. You really just slapped Texas A&M across the face and told them to go home. And that is something else.
Yeah, for me, it had to be the round of 32 game between the 5th seed Miami and the 4th seed Indiana. Miami beating them 85-69. Thought it was going to be much closer than what it was, with Miami kind of struggling against Drake. Don't get me started with Drake. Tucker DeVries, you are not a big fan of you anymore. So my bracket. But outside of that, Miami did end up beating Drake and came in and just absolutely, like Nathan said, against Penn State against Texas A&M, slapped Indiana in the face. Isaiah Wong with 27 points, 8 rebounds, played lights out. Then you had Norchad Omir with 7 points and 17 rebounds, absolute horse on the boards. Then you had Trey Jackson Davis for Indiana with his 23 points. But outside of him and Jalen Hitchefino, well, didn't have a lot of help there, and that was kind of the downfall of them. I think Miami, if Isaiah Wong plays like this and Norchad Omir protects the paint and gets the amount of boards he got against Indiana, they'll upset Houston in the next round.
Hey, Alex, just like you were talking about FAU in the Memphis game, about you being right, I want some credit here. Yeah. After I told you how Miami was going to play with Isaiah Wong. So go ahead and give me my credit.
Yeah, for me, I just want to point out a specific team. I really, really like the way that Texas is playing right now. They were able to just dominate Colgate, just be better and bigger and stronger than they were. But coming in a game against a very hot Penn State team, after Penn State just annihilated Texas A&M, they shoot 1 of 13 from 3 and win by 5 against a very good Penn State team. I think that shows the true depth that this Texas team has. I think that they're very, very much a threat to get to Houston for the Final Four, especially if they start shooting the ball from outside well, like they did very much earlier in the season. But I think the matchup with Xavier and the possible matchup with these are Houston and Miami will be very, very tough. And I'm excited to see what this Texas team can do.
Hey, sir, Gray, who was the only person on that Texas team to make a three?
I'm assuming it was Jabari Rice, your favorite.
Yep, Sir Jabari Rice.
Yeah. So,
get you a shirt that says, I'm a fan of Sir Jabari Rice. Big fan.
Yes, yes.
Number one fan.
And an avid Purdue hater. So, moving on to the West region, the last region to discuss here. But we had some upsets here. Obviously, the one seeded Kansas going down, but the 2, 3, and 4 continued to dominate their other regions. Northwestern or UCLA, excuse me, Gonzaga, and then UConn winning big. What was one game that really stuck out to you, Alex? I'll start with you.
Yeah, it's going to be Arkansas upsetting Kansas 72-71. With that game being so close, I was expecting Bill Self to coach that game. So when Norm Roberts was the coach, I was kind of worried. And with it being, like I said, such a close game and having an inexperienced Norm Roberts as the coach, Eric Musselman was able to out-coach him at that point. Arkansas really didn't shoot well from the three-point line. We've known that all year. They're not a good three-point shooting team. And then you had Nick Smith in the first round and in this round. Has not played a lot. I'm not sure why, if he's dealing with an injury or Musselman doesn't trust him. I'm not really sure. But you had Devo Davis lead the way for Arkansas with 25 points and 8 rebounds. That was the difference in the game. They had Ricky Council at 21 points and 10 for 11 from the line. So I looked at Arkansas. I didn't think they were going to pull this off, but like I said, with Bill Self not on the sideline, I think this was kind of expected with Eric Musselman being the better coach than Norm Roberts.
I'm going to go ahead and highlight number 3 Gonzaga versus number 6 TCU in a game where I really thought TCU was going to come in and, you know, just put Gonzaga's true colors on display. TCU let me down. They had opportunities. They had a lead at halftime, and then they pulled an Auburn and fell apart.
Oh, my gosh.
But this TCU team really, you know, they had a lot of talent. They had Mike Miles Jr., who consistently played good all year, and yet Drew Timmy just decided to be just absolutely insane in the final minutes of this game. And that really put Gonzaga over TCU. So I lose one of my final four teams with that. I know that was a really hot take, but congrats to Gonzaga.
Yeah.
It might have helped if Chuck O'Bannon Jr. wasn't 1 for 9 from the 3-point line.
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention TCU. I wasn't going to mention it.
So I talked about in the Midwest region how well I liked those two matchups in the Elite Eight, the Houston-Miami and the Xavier-Texas. And man, if you look at this West region, I mean, they're just as good, if not considerably better. I mean, starting down at the bottom, you have the 2-seed UCLA and the 3-seed Gonzaga. After both coming off of very close wins in the round of 32, after dominating their round 64 opponent, these are two teams. We get the rematch of the 2020 Final Four game, where Jalen Suggs hit the buzzer beater from about half court. I love that matchup. And then you get two very physical teams in UConn and Arkansas and the other one. I cannot wait to see how those two games go and who comes out of that, who comes out of this region and heads to Houston for the Final Four. Alex, I'll pass it off to you to start wrapping us up and tell people where they can find us.
Before we move on, let's discuss the Sweet 16 real quick, Gray. I think we need to make our picks here.
All right. So we making picks about who's going to go to Houston?
I think that's probably the best thing.
All right. So starting in the South region, I don't think there's any chance that Alabama doesn't just walk to the Final Four. They just got to get by San Diego State and or Creighton and Princeton right there, whoever wins that game. I don't think anybody's going to come to challenge them until they get to the Final Four, and they can play against a team like Kansas State or Tennessee, somebody from the East region. But, I mean, maybe y'all think different. I doubt y'all do, but what do y'all think comes out of this? Who do you think comes out of the South?
I think it's a pretty easy bet that Alabama will. You have a potential opponent in either Princeton or Creighton. At this point, I might as well just go ahead and take Princeton, the way they've been playing and shooting the ball. But if you can imagine before the tournament. If you had told me Alabama might end up playing Princeton in the Elite Eight, I would have thought you were crazy. But it doesn't seem so crazy now.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to say, but Alabama is going to make the Final Four here, unless something drastic happens.
Yeah, unless something absolutely crazy comes out of the blue or something, this is Alabama's ticket to punch right there. But and then in the East region, to try and play somebody like Alabama in the Final Four, you have Florida Atlantic and Tennessee. The winner of that will play the winner of Kansas State and Michigan State after both Purdue and Marquette lose. This is an interesting one as well. For me, I think this is Kansas State. I really like how Michigan State's playing right now. I think this Tom Izzo is the best coach, probably left in the entire Sweet 16. But I really like the way Kansas State's playing right now. As much as I want to pick somebody like Tennessee to advance to the Final Four, because I would like that Tennessee and Alabama matchup again to get that rematch. That would be cool. But I don't see how Tennessee does that without Zakai Ziegler, so I'm going to go with Kansas State.
You know, every single time I think that Kansas State is just going to run away in this East region, I really think back to, you know, Michigan State and Tom Izzo and how they just upset Marquette.
Don't get me started.
It wouldn't be impossible for them to just, you know, keep driving the bus there to the Final Four. So I'm going to go ahead and do this. I'm going to go ahead and say Michigan State makes the Final Four.
For me, I'm going to have to make a bold pick here. I think FAU makes it to the Final Four. I think this is their depth and the way John L. Davis is playing for them. I think they're going to get past Tennessee.
They struggled with FDU.
So did Purdue, and Purdue is the top
Purdue
five
was
the
a garbage team.
They were top five in the country. I'm just
that was that. I didn't put them top five in the country. You go have an argument with the people who did.
I think FAU gets this. I think they're going to be the Cinderella of this tournament and make it all the way to the Final Four.
After their attempt to do whoever it was, I don't even know the kid's name. Whoever attempted to do that end of the game as the final seconds for taking off 360 dunk and missed it. I've turned myself into actually, I'm going to root for Tennessee as hard as I possibly can in that Sweet 16 game. It's really hard to do as an Auburn fan, but I've got to do it. I cannot
shame.
Play for Florida.
Shame.
Hey, great. Die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. That's FAU.
Oh, my gosh. So, talking about the Midwest region, again, I think the Midwest and the West, the right side of the bracket, if you're looking at it, will come out with better matchups in the Final Four, because I think Alabama takes whoever comes out of the East region. But I really like the way Texas has been playing. Again, like I said when we were talking about them, I think if they can knock down threes, they're the team to beat out of this Midwest region all of a sudden. I think it would be really cool if Houston were to have a home Final Four, but it's kind of the same thing with Texas. So I'm going to go with the Longhorns.
I will second that motion. Yes. I think that's a pretty easy pick.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go either Xavier or Miami. I'm kind of just tossing those up, but I think Xavier's going to pull it out. The way they played against Pitt, I know it's Pitt, but they had six guys score double figures. The one thing that worries about me for Xavier is their point guard, Soleil Boom, has not played great this tournament. But I think with the Texas team not shooting the three ball well, I think they're going to move past them. I think they're going to move past Miami.
It was a fluke. It was a fluke game.
Yeah. So now in the West region, we have Arkansas and UConn and then Gonzaga and UCLA. Some really good matchups here. A really good potential matchup in the Elite Eight, no matter what directions you go in the Sweet 16. Really like the way Arkansas and UConn are playing right now, but I think UCLA and Gonzaga are both deeper teams than those two. I think Arkansas has got the most NBA talent on their team, but I really like the way that Gonzaga is playing. However, I think this is UCLA's chance to get the rematch against Gonzaga and then go and play somebody like Arkansas or UConn that you've got more experience than and advance to the Houston Final Four.
I think this is a pretty obvious pick because I've talked about physicality so much throughout this tournament, throughout this whole season. and I've been really high on this UConn team. I think that after watching their first two games, I think that they're going to keep on rolling here and get to the Final Four.
Yeah, I think the way this tournament's been reffed, I think UConn's benefiting from it. Very physical team. Adama Sanogo's been playing really well. The one thing I worry about with UConn is they have struggled in the first half of these games. I know it's the first half, but if you're going against a team like Arkansas or Gonzaga or UCLA and you struggle in the first half, it might be a really bad look for UConn. But I think the way they're physical, how physical they are, and the way they've been playing, I think they're going to get out of this region.
Wow, we actually agreed for once, Alex.
Something new.
So those are our Final Four predictions. The next time we'll be talking to you, we will know who is in the Final Four, and we'll be predicting those three games, the two Final Four games and the national championship that Monday night. Alex, I am now going to pass it off to you to get us out of here and tell people where they can find us.
Yeah, you can find us at studentsofthegame.net. That's our website. We write and post articles. There's some additional podcasts on there. We just launched a YouTube video. There's a link to that on there. And you also can get a link to the Tony Curry radio playlist for our show. And then you can follow us on Instagram at studentsofthegame.tkr and TikTok studentsofthegame.tkr. And then on Twitter at SOTG_TKR. Hope you reach out to us there, get some of that content. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.